Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
It's Real College Podcast. I'm Patrick Sharkey. We've got a special spooky episode of the show this week. Yes, happy Halloween week to you all. I hope all your candy-related dreams do come true. Did you know Americans spend more money for Halloween tricks and treats than on any other holiday outside of Christmas? Well, there you have it. Goblins, ghouls, and other creepy crawlers haunt the show today as Jackie Renzetti takes a special trip to one of the scariest and creepiest haunted houses in the entire country. And later, Jacob Maldonado Medina speaks to a real live clown. Plus, some sexy Halloween costume talk. Yes, we do it all, spooky and sexy, here on the Real College Podcast. And it all starts right now. From haunted houses to scary costumes, there are plenty of ways to get scared on Halloween. But why do people actually like this stuff? Up next on our show, producer Jackie Renzetti finds out why we like to scare ourselves for fun.
She's never been here before.
A couple weeks ago, I went to my first haunted house in years. And it wasn't your typical place with the creepy guy and the chainsaw that you can just walk past and ignore.
We ask that you do not touch the actors. They can touch you, but you cannot touch them.
I had to actually interact with people.
If the actors ask you to do something, you need to do it.
Like, clowns squirted stuff at me. And I went alone.
You have a safe word. It is uncle.
Okay.
So you can say that in dire circumstances.
I thought I was just going to get in and out of there, just get some ambient sound and leave.
I think it's your time.
All right.
I wanted to be quiet the whole time so that I could get tape and just leave. But instead...
Ah! Oh my God! Oh my God! Okay. Okay. Oh my God! Oh my God! Uncle! Okay, I'm done! Uncle!
Oh, are you sure?
Yes,
sure?
Yes, I am so
100%.
Sure.
All right.
I am 100% sure.
My name's Liam. It's nice to meet you.
Okay, nice to meet you too.
My tape shows I was down there for less than 5 minutes. I used the safe word, known as uncling out, when two clowns cornered me, and I just didn't see myself going through another 30 minutes. Since then, I've been determined to figure something out. Why are haunted houses so successful? Who likes being scared? And who likes actually scaring people? Today, I'm going to walk you through each of these questions. So, obviously, some people love scaring others. The Soap Factory Haunted House is celebrating its 10th year this Halloween. After I uncled out, I got the chance to sit down with the director, Christopher Barden, to find out what it's like on the other side.
It's invigorating. It's invigorating, but it's also, you kind of have a relationship, you sort of have a contract with the people you're scaring. You can't just bully them. You can't just be aggressive and make them feel uncomfortable and threatened. You have to be artful about it. You have to kind of tap into why they're there. Some people are real fear junkies, and they are our catnip. We love them. I once spent 5 minutes stroking a man's hair with a fake skeleton hand, and he was crouched in a corner in a fetal position, screaming, but I could tell he loved it. That's why he was here.
So, scaring is an art form, and it takes a mastery of knowing how to interact with each person that walks through a haunted house. But once you have that mastery, what do you do with it? What defines success for a haunted house? When I first climbed up back the stairs, still recovering from my experience in the Soap Factory haunted basement, I was surprised to find a crew of staffers flocking over to me, asking me, at which point did I uncle out? This was the last thing I wanted to be talking about. It was embarrassing, and I was really just there to do some interviews. But then I understood. This is exciting for them. It means all of their hard work has succeeded in frightening someone. But Christopher says it's not just about that.
That's not really success to us. Success isn't how many people we can have uncle out, because we want them to see everything. We want them to have a full experience. Success to us is when we talk to someone afterwards and they make up creatures that weren't down there, because we provoked them to use their imagination in really weird and bizarre and extreme ways. When we can do that to people, that's success to me.
Do you have any like examples of that from the past?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just a random example. It's not, we had someone come up just freaked out, sweaty, you know, clearly all of the actors had messed with them because there was shaving cream in their hair and fake blood on their face, like they had been through it. And they were talking about this blue monster that kept creeping on them, that kept following them. There was no blue monster. There was no blue monster. I mean, we went around to all of the different actors to try to figure out what this creature was, and it was something they completely made up, you know? And a lot of people go down there with just like these preconceived notions that their fears, their personal fears are going to be down there, and they somehow manifest it. They see it, they smell it, they hear it. And for us to be able to usher that into people's imaginations is amazing.
At the Soap Factory, success is about more than just scaring people. It's about playing with people's imaginations. I can't say what the goal is for all the other haunted houses in America, but I can say that the growing industry is feeding off one main thing. People like to get scared for fun. And I still need to know, why? How did we get to this point where scaring each other by choice is a common activity? So next, let's take a step back and look at the origin of this tradition. I called Margie Kerr. She's a sociologist that studies fear and even consults haunted houses. She says people have always been scaring each other.
There's a great book called American Fear by historian Peter Stearns, and you know he says that if we want to find the origins of self-scaring, we really have to go all the way back to when language was first introduced to society, so really when we became civilized, because storytelling was such a powerful way to communicate information, to transmit knowledge to the next generation. So they would do the, you know, sit around the campfire and tell scary stories to warn the next generation about the threats in their environment and, you know, what kinds of things they should stay away from.
So we went from telling spooky stories to teach a lesson to frightening each other for fun. We can trace the modern-day haunted house attraction to Disneyland's Haunted Mansion, which opened in 1969.
And a ghost will follow you home.
Margie says since then, reiterations of that haunted house have gone from charity fundraisers to full-fledged businesses. Meanwhile, the holiday itself has grown more popular over the past century. This year, the National Retail Federation predicts Americans will spend $8.4 billion on Halloween.
It really became solidified as a holiday, and a lot of that was purposeful marketing by, you know, consumer groups that had an interest in it. So the attractions definitely benefited from that, because now they could tie on to the already strong awareness that this time of year you eat candy, you dress up, and you go to a haunted house. It became kind of that's what you do.
Like any established holiday, Halloween has a strong social component to it. And before we get to the psychological part, it's worth mentioning the social aspect plays a large role in why people like getting scared. When you're with your friends, it can be fun.
Just like amusement parks, you usually are going with your friends. And especially in the 80s and 90s, haunted houses were some of the first things that, you know, kids got to do on their own. And so it's this moment of kind of freedom, and it's scary, and you're with your friends, so you're building these strong memories, and you're high-fiving, and you're, you know, facing threat together. So it becomes just a fun social experience.
Cool. Yeah, that makes sense. I was by myself, so that was probably an
error
on my part.
That makes a huge difference. Yeah, yeah.
Friends definitely help. But what's really going on inside our brains? How can people take joy in being afraid? As it turns out, some people are definitely more inclined to this than others.
There's been some really good research looking at the role of genes, but, you know, genes are going to interact with environment, and that we know that early childhood development plays largely into how we're going to deal with stress and whether we'll be more stress sensitive or resilient. And a lot of these traits are pretty stable over time, though they are somewhat flexible.
It's easier for some than others, based on a couple different factors. But for those who are able to do it, how does it work? How can we use fear, a survival mechanism, for fun?
As humans, we're really, you know, we're really pretty awesome because we can activate our threat response. We can, you know, scare ourselves, but then we're reminded that we're actually safe, and then it just becomes like any other high arousal response, like excitement or, you know, joy and happiness. The chemical properties are all very similar. It's just the context that's different. So we can go from screaming to laughing because we've, you know, realized we're safe, we're not really in danger, but our body is excited and, you know, activated, and so instead of screaming, we're laughing.
Everyone has different backgrounds, so it's easier for some people than others. But really, it's all in our heads. We have to turn the switch on to let our brains know that we're not actually in danger. Then, we can actually enjoy this feeling of being horrified, like the man Christopher scratched with a fake skeleton hand. This tradition of scaring each other goes back to when we were first able to communicate, though haunted houses exploded along with the rise of consumerism in America. Today, in haunted houses, we can't see the other person telling us a story. They're hidden behind masks or maybe clown makeup. But Christopher tells us they're really just trying to interact with us and help us walk through our imagined fears. I don't think it's a stretch to say that haunted house tours are extensions of the age-old tradition of storytelling. And maybe, through using our imaginations to face our fears, there's still lessons to be learned. And that just might make these places a little less scary and a little more fun. For Real College Podcast, I'm Jackie Renzetti.
For question of the week this week, we decided to turn the tables. We asked men what sexy costume they would wear.
I feel like lumberjack, right?
Some of the fox hat.
I think it's a cardboard box, something like a present, something along those lines. I don't know, what, maybe like a gift from God? I don't know. Something like that.
You know, I would agree. Something that's classy, maybe a little bit of like baby wrapping kind of on it, and a bow tie. A bow tie really, really gets the ladies going is what I hear, so.
I've seen a stripper SpongeBob, all right? That's the sexiest costume I've ever seen. If I want to see SpongeBob in a stripper costume, that is the sexiest costume I've ever seen.
I don't know if I'm the best person to answer this, but I'd have to go with probably a cop, like sexy cop.
That's tricky. Captain America in a Speedo. So what that means is he's wearing a Speedo, and then he'll have this really tiny shield, you know, right around his crotch. It's the sexiest costume a guy could wear that I could think of.
Yes, all 19. You know, you walk around with 19 on, you know, you just walk the street both naked.
I think it really depends on how you wear the costume. I think, honestly, the construction worker is the go-to. Just because all you gotta do is throw on a hard hat, and then there's your costume. But I have nothing else after that. I don't know why I said but.
That's a really good question. I don't know. I got no idea. Like,
Austin Powers.
Austin
for sure.
Powers.
Austin Powers.
Austin Powers for sure.
That's Shagadelic. That's
Shagadelic.
Totally
Randy. Randy and Shagadelic.
Absolutely Shagadelic. Austin
yes.
Powers.
If I could be a sexy
I wish we could bring back the sexy vampire. Just that Edward Cullen classic pale skin. I already have the pale skin for it. So just that kind of classic vampire look.
What would I be? I would be a swimmer. An Olympic swimmer in just a Speedo. And go out just like that in the cold October autumn nights.
I'm gonna be a sexy cookie, and I'm just not gonna wear any clothes. I'm just gonna like just draw like giant dots on my body and just walk around, and then just wear like nude underwear too, and then like nobody will notice, and it'll be tight. And then if people are like, "What are you?" I'm gonna say a cookie, and if they don't get it, well, they're dumb, and I leave. Cool. Got
him. I would probably be a sexy cat, I think. Just cause. I just want to see what all the fuss is about, you know? Just want to see why it's so popular, you know?
A hangnail. What's sexier than a hangnail? I mean, that's the answer.
For Radio K, I'm Jacob Maldonado.
And I'm Haley Madram.
Well, Halloween is upon us, and many people are wondering if they're going to run into the feared clowns of their nightmares. Jaka decided to get a different view on the clown story, and she decided to talk to one herself.
It seems like for the past month, I couldn't go on social media without seeing something about the clowns. And with the constant barrage of bad stories about clowns, I never stopped to think about the good clowns, the ones who are doing this for a living, trying to make people happy. Until I talked to Rachel. Rachel's one of the good clowns.
My name is Rachel Thief, and I am Evie the Clown.
So how long have you been a clown?
I started clowning 8 years ago.
All right. And what made you decide to start clowning?
I sewed some costumes for the St. Paul Clown Club for some members there, and I was invited to do the class party at my daughter's school for her kindergarten class, and I decided to wear one of the costumes that I made, and I really liked putting it on. So I talked to some of the people I knew and joined their club and started clowning.
Do you have any sort of good childhood memories of clowns that you saw when you were a kid at all?
Well, my mom... I grew up in Anoka County, and so and we had a big Halloween parade every year in October, or, you know, sometime around Halloween. It could have been November, too. But my mom was a clown in the parade, and I don't know. She was really fun when she put on her clown stuff and Goofy, and I remember that. And I dressed up like a clown a lot when I was a little girl. But no, I actually, I probably was one of the kind of people who would have been afraid of clowns when I was a kid, besides that. So
why do you think, in general, people are scared of clowns?
I think it's kind of popular to be afraid of clowns. I know that there's a phobia associated with it, and that the enlarged features on clowns and the social awkwardness of clowns and their goofiness is very abstract to a lot of people and uncomfortable for them. But I also think that, you know, it's trendy to be scared of clowns. I don't know if that makes any sense right now, but I don't know if everyone who's afraid of clowns has a legitimate fear, but I know that the exaggerated features and the social stuff, it just some clowns are very awkward. So, and not everyone who dresses up as a clown does a good job. So,
right, absolutely. All right. So the whole creepy clown phenomenon that's been going on, when did you first hear about it?
A couple years ago, actually. Some articles began surfacing, but I know that over the summer is when probably July or August, when things were going on on the East Coast, was when I heard about it. And I work in I work at a school, and the local police department sent all school staff notices about the clown scare because it was affecting the middle schoolers, and the kids at school started talking about it in September this year.
How do you feel that that whole phenomenon of having the creepy clowns, how do you think that has affected business for regular clowns?
Well, I don't feel as comfortable putting on my clown costume. There's a lot of hatred towards clowns right now. I don't think that many of us feel comfortable going out in public and doing our clown thing. We don't want to be confused for a clown with a bad intention, but I'm pretty sure that the way that we look is quite different from the way that scary clowns are trying to look. But since I've never seen one of the scary clowns, I really don't know. But it definitely has slowed down business, as you say. But it's not really a business for me. It's just something that I do to make people happy.
And then as a parent, how did you feel hearing about these creepy clowns?
Well, it angered me. I mean, obviously these people, well, for one thing, they aren't clowns. They're these terrible people that are taking an innocent figure like a clown and making it into something scary and something that it's not intended to be. But they shouldn't be lurking around schools. Creepy people at schools, whether they're clowns or not, just don't make any parents feel good. I don't know. I don't want to stop being a clown. I don't want kids to start thinking that clowns are supposed to be something scary. I'm upset that schools are banning clown costumes this Halloween. To ban clown costumes just seems pretty absurd to me.
That's sort of all the questions I have. Is there anything you wanted to add? Anything about clowning? Put a good word out there?
Well, just that people who are clowns, I mean legitimate clowns, the reason why we do it is to make people happy. We do it to brighten people's days, and none of us would do it and actually, because of the effort it takes to dress up and put on our suits and our makeup, we wouldn't do it if people weren't responding to us in a positive way, if we weren't making people happy. And that's not making the news. It's not making the news that there's a disproportionate amount of people who like clowns. You know, so many people are talking about how they don't like clowns, and I read an article a few days ago saying that most people don't like clowns, and that's really not true. If that were true, I wouldn't do it. I mean, the reception that I get when I do a parade or when I do a carnival at a school, or I did balloon animals at a mosque over the summer, the reception I get is positive. I mean, it's an outlier who's going to be afraid at anything that I do. So I don't know. I guess that all I would really want to say is that my goal and my aim is to make people happy.
Reporting for Radio K, this is Jacob Maldonado Medina.
For Real College Podcast, I'm William Bjørndal, and this is The Word on the Street. On Tuesday, November 1st, New Jersey virtuosic alt-punkers Screaming Females hit the 7th Street entry at 8 p.m. with special guests Moore Mother and Epic Downtime. Back in 2015, Screaming Females stopped in here at Radio K in support of their 2015 release, Rose Mountain, and they recorded this track, Triumph.
So heavily swill, and a head full of hate, sinners lose, lock the gate, stir the slop and burn your wrist, and now you lose. I'll twist the volume too loud, I'll touch the screen and turn around, I'm a sign that I'm bound, and now I lose.
On Wednesday, November 2nd, progressive dream funkers Treading North are joined by the New Sound Underground and Docs Robotics at the Cedar Cultural Center in support of 15 Now Minnesota. Doors open at 7 p.m. Here's Treading North's Dunes. Thursday, November 3rd, Zulu Zulu continues their Astral Beat series at the Ice House. The second night of this month-long series features MMYYKK as the featured member of this Twin Cities supergroup. Earlier this year, they dropped their debut record, What's the Price? Here's the title track. Sunday, November 6th, Oakland Goof Groovers Trails and Ways are joined by special guests Kayak and Astral Samara at the 7th Street Entry. Doors open at 7 p.m. for this 18-plus event. Trails and Ways expertly combine warm grooves and guitar pop on their track, My Things. That's the word on the street. For Real College Podcast, I'm William Bjorndahl.
That's all for Real College Podcast this week. Real College Podcast is edited by me, Patrick Sharkey. The show is produced by Jackie Renzetti, Emily LePain, and Max Fuller. My thanks to Jacob Maldonado Medina, Jackie Renzetti, and Haley Matteram for contributing today's show. Oh, and William Bjorndahl, thanks to him too. On next week's show, we're going to talk about more fun stuff, just like we did this week. We're going to talk about things like video games and elections. But until then, eat all the candy your heart desires, because we're all going to die anyway. Thanks for tuning in. Weary of the ways of